This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. And just a reminder, please continue to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. We give you three episodes every week. And today, it's Wednesday. Wednesdays with Wes Reynolds, and also our check-in with Brett Ciancia of Pick 6 Previews. His product, Pick 6 Plus, is a very nice tool to have in the tool belt. I actually ran into Dustin Sweetelson on Saturday after the VSiN College Football Tailgate Show, which, by the way, you could check out every Saturday, 9 a.m. Eastern on VSiN and a handful of other spots, including Marquee Network in Chicago, Masson 2 in D.C., Nesson Plus in New England. So we're all over the place there on Saturday mornings. But I ran into Dustin, and he said, man, the Pick 6 Plus is a really help in preparing for the college football week. So check it out. We'll talk with Brett here in just a little bit. Quick open, as we normally do on Wednesdays. And I was curious on Monday night, Matt Newmans and I were talking about all of the coaching firings that have unfolded so far in college football. And I was curious how those teams have fared immediately after the coach was fired, the old fired coach bump, right? Because we've seen a couple of teams, most notably UCLA and UAB, have some big time upsets. UCLA beating Penn State, as we all remember, as around a 24-point underdog. And then this past weekend, UAB stunning Memphis as a 23.5-point underdog. And a pretty neat story there with Chris Mortensen, the late great Chris Mortensen's son, being the interim head coach at UAB. So far, we have had seven in-season firings in the FBS ranks. This does not include Stanford, who relieved their coach prior to the start of the season, bringing in Frank Reich on an interim basis. So the in-season firings have been Virginia Tech, Oklahoma State, UCLA, Arkansas, Oregon State, Penn State, and UAB. Colorado State fired Jay Norvell over the weekend after they lost to Hawaii, and Florida got rid of Sunbelt Billy after they did get the win over Mississippi State. But with a bye week coming up and the cocktail party, they made the decision to fire Sunbelt Billy this past weekend. So Florida doesn't fit this exercise because they don't play this weekend, but Colorado State does. So when we look at how teams have fared so far, immediately after their coach got fired, let's go back to Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech, after three games, decided to make the move. Brent Pry, adios. They made the move there. Virginia Tech played FCS Wofford the week after they fired their head coach. They were a 35-point favorite. They won 38-6, so they did not cover. It is worth noting, the following week, as a 10-point underdog, they beat NC State, so won that game outright. So they did win and cover their first FBS opponent, but we're not going to shift the data too much. They didn't cover the first game. But then we get to Oklahoma State. Mike Gundy fired their next game on the road at Baylor. Pokes were 21-point underdogs. They lost, but 45-27. Got the cover. Since then, by the way, Oklahoma State has not covered a game. Oklahoma State, 1-6 ATS on the year, and I believe 38-point underdogs this week against the Red Raiders of Texas Tech. Okay, UCLA. This has been the one that we have all pointed to. Since Deshaun Foster has been fired, UCLA went on the road to Northwestern, 6-point underdog. They covered that game. Since then, they beat Penn State as a 3-plus touchdown underdog. They beat Michigan State as a touchdown-plus underdog. And then they were favored this weekend against Maryland. And depending on what number you got, it was either a push or a fail to cover as they won by 3. So they're 3-1 straight up, 3-1 against the spread based off of the closing number, but covered immediately. How about Arkansas? Old neck brace Bobby Petrino. How have the Razorbacks fared since they fired Sam Pittman following the 56-13 loss to Notre Dame? October 11th, 10-point underdog to Tennessee, lost 34-31. That would be a cover. Arkansas, by the way, also backdoor cover du jour this weekend. I did not give that out on the podcast. That was a bet that I was very curious about. Ultimately didn't give it out, and they got a late touchdown, as it felt like Bobby Petrino maybe playing towards the cover there. But Arkansas 2-0 ATS since firing Sam Pittman. Oregon State, they were winless. They fire Trent Bray, and they were a 21.5-point favorite against Lafayette, the Leopards from the Patriot League. Shout out to the Lehigh Valley. The Lafayette Leopards went out to Corvallis, and they were winning at halftime, Lafayette was. Oregon State did outscore Lafayette 35-0 in the second half. That would be a cover, 45-13. Two other games, Penn State, 3-point underdog at Iowa. They lost the game 25-24, but got the cover. And then UAB, as mentioned, 23.5-point underdogs to Memphis, won the game outright 31-24. So 6-1 against the spread for teams who have fired their head coach. Now, I tried to look up historical precedent. I was texting with a buddy, you know, is this a blip? Maybe it is, but I thought it was worth noting because it feels like we're going to get more of these firings as the year goes on. We have Colorado State playing Wyoming this weekend. We have Florida playing Georgia next weekend. Could we see an in-season firing with a team like Wisconsin? Certainly is possible with them on the road as a near 5-touchdown underdog this week against Oregon. So I'll just say this real quickly regarding Colorado State and Wyoming. This is not a game in which I am blindly just betting on the fired coach bump. Is it part of the handicap? A little bit. But I also think, too, there is a belief, and I think Brad Powers is the one who brought this up a year or two ago on this podcast, or maybe on VSiN Primetime. Teams who lose to FCS teams early on in the year are looked to be on discount as the season goes on, because the perception is, well, this team sucks. They lost to an FCS opponent, and you might get, air quotes, value on that particular team. I think the same is true regarding teams with fired coaches. And you got to realize this. Colorado State and Wyoming, it's a big time rivalry. It's the border war, and this has been going on for 100 plus years. And word on the street, they're not trying to cancel this rivalry, USC Notre Dame. But I am actually curious about when Colorado State goes to the Pac-12. I don't know. Hopefully they don't cancel this rivalry, because it is a great one. And I think you're going to get the best from Colorado State in this game. And I don't think Wyoming should be laying 5.5 really against anybody in the FBS. So I did bet Colorado State. It is not blindly on the fired coach bump, but we'll see if the trend does continue. 6-1 so far this year. The game after the head coach was fired, they have covered. So we will see if that trend continues. 6 straight covers as well. So I will be on the Colorado State Rams. Hold your nose. Take the 5.5 in that spot against Wyoming in the border war. Before we take a quick break, I did get a tweet, and you can always tweet me at @1TimMurray. This came from JC as we tweeted out a video from Tuesday's podcast of me and Adam Burke talking about the Heisman Trophy. And he said, "Tim, that hat is fire emoji." Well, thank you very much. This is, of course, our Rainbow Authentics hat, and I wear it quite often, as much as I can, because I love it. I agree. I think this hat is fire. I don't want to ever say that again, because it just felt awkward saying it. But Rainbow Authentics has been a proud sponsor of this podcast all year long. It's your official source for game-used apparel, autographs, and trading cards for Hawaii student-athletes. Every item tells a story, whether it's a game-worn jersey, a signed ball, or unique collectibles. You're capturing the moment and owning a piece of Hawaii sports history. Beyond memorabilia, Rainbow Authentics is committed to supporting the community. Their mission is rooted in empowering student-athletes and coaches, strengthening local programs, and giving back to Hawaii with pride. With exclusive custom gear, Rainbow Authentics also makes sure you look your best every game day. So check them out, rainbowauthentics.com. Word on the street, as I've mentioned a couple podcasts, could be some t-shirts in the works over there. So keep your eyes peeled for that. And we certainly will don them on the podcast if that comes to fruition. Mahalo to our friends Rainbow Authentics, a proud sponsor of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. A shout out to Timmy Chang, by the way, of the Bowl Eligible Bows. He joined us on VSiN Primetime, so if you want to check out that interview at VSiN Live, I also retweeted it at one Tim Murray. All right, quick break. When we come back, Wednesdays with Wes Reynolds will jump on the podcast as we take a look at some situational spots and best bets for week 9 of the college football season.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. It is Wednesday, which means Wednesdays with Wes. Wes Reynolds joins us here at Wes Reynolds 1 on Twitter. And he is feeling great, fresh off of a trip to SoFi Stadium to watch his Colts dominate whatever the hell those uniforms were that the Chargers were wearing. Man, back-to-back, pretty decent weekends for you, man. Hoosier land is feeling good right now.
Yeah, I don't feel like as much of a mush. Last two trips have been wins, one in Eugene and one in L.A. So you know what they say, Tim, in 49 states, it's just football. But this is Indiana. And replace football with basketball, and that's the actual tagline. But it feels like Indiana, like the state, the Hoosier State, is the new football overlords right now, with the Colts at 7-1 and Indiana, at, the Indiana Toosiers, as we're calling them, as they are still number two in the country. Those Buckeyes still one ahead of them. But yeah, exciting times to see these teams be successful. Hopefully, they can keep it rolling. They're both big favorites this week, but of course, that scares the hell out of me. You know, like something's going to happen. It's like, you know, two touchdown favorites for the Colts, Indiana, 25.5, 26 point favorites over a all of a sudden resurgent UCLA Bruins team that Kurt Cignetti says, hey, they're 3-0, because they really are 3-0 ever since that coaching change.
Yeah, I wasn't going to correct old Kurt there, but they're 3-1. They did lose to UCLA, but I guess since Jerry Neuheisel has taken over, since the former Indiana OC Tino Sunseri was let go, they have been 3-0. So let's jump right into it. UCLA, Indiana, Indiana boy, minus 2,500 to make the playoff right now. Fernando Mendoza, the Heisman betting favorite. It is 2025, ladies and gentlemen, and that is the truth about Indiana football. And they are on a collision course, it would seem, to face unbeaten Ohio State in the Big Ten Championship in Indianapolis the first weekend in December. But as you mentioned, UCLA, and I just did the open on the fired coach bump, no team has felt that bump more than the Bruins. This is a team that's 3-1 straight up, 3-1 ATS based off of the closing number, because they actually closed about a 3.5-4 point favorite against Maryland over the past weekend. So as you alluded to, Indiana is a big favorite, 25.5 point favorite here, Wes. What do you make of this spot here? Early start time for UCLA at Indiana, but they did have an early start time a couple weeks ago, and I thought it would be a letdown spot after their win over Penn State, and I could have been further from the truth as they smash Michigan State. 25.5 is the number. What do we make of this spot here for your Hoosiers?
Probably right around the right number. And yeah, I ended up being on Michigan State last week at 27.5, and it dropped, and you know, had to sweat that to the very end, though. Michigan State got off to a good start. Indiana maybe was a little slow to get out of gates, a little sloppy early off that big win against Oregon, which you would certainly expect, but then got it going. Of course, the field goal late as Michigan State down 25, taking timeouts at under 2 minutes when Indiana, I think, was just wanting to run out the clock. So Cignetti sends Nico Radicic out there to kick the field goal. They go up 28. Everybody's happy. They're going to cover on homecoming, and then Michigan State drives down and kicks the cowardly yet brave, for my perspective, field goal as they get inside the number. And I think that that number is about right here with UCLA. And you know, I know that sounds like coach speak with Kurt Cignetti, what he's saying, but UCLA has all of a sudden got a little life now, you know, because you would have thought, okay, they beat Penn State. Maybe it's like, okay, that's our accomplishment for the season. And they said no, and they ran out Michigan State and Spartan Stadium. And then coin flip game ends up winning it at the end against Maryland. I did not think they were very impressive in that game. I mean, it could have gone either way, but the Bruins get a win. Now they're 3-4 and thinking, okay, we got life. So they're going to come in here motivated, of course, knowing that they're big underdogs and playing at number two in the country. I think this number's about right, because these numbers are going to start to get taxed. I know that we have not had the official college football playoff rankings, I believe, 2 weeks from yesterday, Tuesday, as we record on Wednesday, is when we're going to finally get them. But you're going to start to see the numbers with these top teams get really, really taxed. And I think that you're seeing that with Indiana. There's a 26 out there at the Wynn, right on the strip here in fabulous Las Vegas. 25 and a half pretty much everywhere. I'm not really wanting to lay it, Tim, to be honest with you, because I think UCLA could be live for a backdoor. This is a team that I think all of a sudden has new life, and they're trying. Like, they're competing. They haven't mailed in the season, because 3-4, it's not outside the realm of possibility that this team could get to 6 wins and get bowl eligible. I think, you know, odds are against it, but, you know, stranger things have happened. But Indiana, you know, we'll see if they're going to be sharp early, because they were not necessarily sharp last week when they started out. They trailed actually in the middle of the second quarter, 10-7, then all of a sudden just had too much for Michigan State.
Yeah, I think there's a couple good spots to potentially back UCLA against Nebraska next weekend, against Washington, and then who knows in that rivalry game against USC. So, as you mentioned, 3-4, they're definitely fighting for it, and that coaching staff is fighting for it as well to try to get that job, whether it be Tim Skipper, and maybe it's a package with him and Jerry Neuheisel. So, we'll see how it ultimately plays out there in LA with UCLA, but you know, my preseason win totals, Wes, are doing pretty well. We've cashed a couple already, but my in-season win total bet on UCLA, not so much. I took under 1.5 and didn't think that this team would turn it around like they did, and they have. But, you know, one thing that you and I really look at is situational spots in college football, and we go through them every Tuesday night on VSiN Primetime, and we're going to bring them to the show here. And it is a great spot this week for Iowa State. I know they're dealing with some injuries in the secondary. Their top two corners lost for the year, but they're at home. They're coming off a bye, and then you've got BYU coming to town, fresh off of a win over Utah, a rivalry game. And look, BYU, kind of like last year, starting to get that, hey, no one's respecting BYU. They're an underdog again to Iowa State. I bet Iowa State didn't get the best of the number on the money line, but I laid $1.40. That's still available at Circa. I think this is a phenomenal spot for Iowa State. And I do think, while BYU deserves their flowers, I don't think they're, you know, a top 10 team in the country per se, even though they're 7-0. What do you make of this spot, Iowa State hosting BYU on Saturday?
Yeah, and it's kind of a must spot for Iowa State if they want to be that Big 12 representative, or at least one of them, in the college football playoff. They're 2-2 right now in the standings, are the Clones. And off that bye week, off that bye week, they played Colorado 2 weeks before. BYU and Cincinnati, the only two teams right now undefeated in Big 12 play at 4-0. And I don't want to discredit BYU, because, look, they got the win in a rivalry game in the Holy War over Utah. I thought they got outplayed a lot of the game. They got outgamed by over 100 yards. Utah, I think, made some crucial mistakes, not only on the field, but on the sideline, too. And I'll go all the way back to about middle of the third quarter. It's 10-7. So it's 4th-and-3 from the 8 for Utah. And usually that's a go situation, right? But in that game, it might have been a kick the field goal situation. Knowing that points were going to be at a premium, Utah does not kick. They go for it. They get stopped a yard short. And I think that that turned the game. And Utah just kind of beat themselves. 2 turnovers, 10 penalties. There was a bad targeting call, too, late in the second half that really went against them. So everything is self-inflicted wounds, and then bad breaks, I think, really got Utah. Now you got BYU going on the road, and you know, this BYU team, I know Bachmeier has been proven capable, but you got to make him beat you with his arm. You got to make him beat you and say, okay, if you're going to beat me, then you beat me. But I'm going to make you beat me here. And I think BYU, they've been fortunate in a couple of these games. They were fortunate against Arizona, came back, won in overtime, held on against Colorado. That game was pretty much in the balance for the most part in the second half. So I think this is a definite good spot for Iowa State, and this is kind of a must-have if they want to have a chance of getting that Big 12 title game. So I like the Clones and Jack Trice on Saturday.
Yeah, no, it's the Big 12, and that's what we saw last week, not only with Utah losing to BYU as around a 3.5-4 point favorite, but also Texas Tech, who, you know, at the point heading into last weekend seemed like, oh man, this is the unstoppable force in this conference. And then Arizona State, they get Sam Levitt back. Baron Morton was out for Texas Tech. And Arizona State's able to get that victory last week, kind of in a wacky game. And now, if you're Arizona State on the flip side, you have to turn around and play Houston. And I think this is another tricky situation where Arizona State, the champ from a year ago, we remember how well they played in the playoff, and then it kind of resurfaces in our mind, oh yeah, this Arizona State team is pretty darn good, and now they're laying 7.5 here against Houston. I'm curious your thoughts on this one, because I also think this is a bit of a tricky spot. I would love for this game to have been in Houston, but still, I think 7.5 is an interesting angle here to look at the Cougars as a dog at Arizona State. What do you make of ASU hosting the Cougs on Saturday night?
Yeah, maybe this is a little bit of a fade the field storm, as you did have a minor field storm there at Sun Devil Stadium on Saturday. And Houston, look, 6-1. I know they've had some, you know, kind of an easy schedule, but they did beat Colorado. They did beat Arizona last week, who's played solid football, I think, this year. And Willie Fritz, this might be a little bit of an underrated club at 6-1. Connor Wiegman, I think, has been competent at quarterback, the former Texas A&M quarterback. They got housed by Texas Tech a couple weeks ago at home, 35-11. But that was Texas Tech really at full strength with Baron Morton at quarterback, and that Texas Tech defense, which is absolutely terrific, kind of fell apart late in the second half against ASU as the Sun Devils escaped with the win. But I thought that this was a little bit too many. I think Houston is very capable with Willie Fritz, and, you know, second year of him being down there in Houston. And what do they say, that first year to the second year is usually your biggest improvement, or certainly when you see it, I think, come to fruition. And I think we've seen that with Houston. So I thought 7.5 was a little high for ASU. And like you said, this is the Big 12. We don't know who the best team is in this conference yet. And it's going to be very much like it was last year, where, you know, it's kind of that wheel, like one team, one week it's one team, then one week it's the next team, then one week it's another team. And you know, the two left standing are just going to be in the championship game. So I think that's the nature of the Big 12. And I do like Houston here. I think ASU, I don't think they were necessarily lucky last week, but they pulled one out late. And I think that this is going to be a tight race, and it's just going to be who the last two standing are for that title game. And Houston's certainly right in the mix for that.
Yeah, we talked about it when Adam and I recorded earlier this week, some of the props that DraftKings put up on how many teams will make the college football playoff from each conference. And the Big 12 under 1.5 was -180. That's moved 50 cents now. It's out to -230. And I think that move is accurate. I think the Texas Tech loss really hurts that conference's chance to have multiple bids into the CFP. We'll see if BYU can magically run the table, but both you and I think they will be handed their first loss of the season on Saturday. A conference that'll have plenty of representation in the college football playoff is the SEC, and a team that I was very high on preseason was Alabama, and boy, didn't get off to a good start, as we all know, losing as a 2-touchdown favorite to Florida State. But now you look at this stretch that they have been on. Alabama has beaten 4 straight ranked teams, going back to at Georgia, home to Vanderbilt, at Missouri, and then last weekend, the rivalry game against Tennessee, where they got their revenge. You wonder a little bit, is there going to be a sigh of relief? We know Kalen DeBoer historically as a double-digit favorite hasn't fared all that well. They head on the road to South Carolina. I think this is a really, really tricky spot for Alabama here at Williams-Brice. That all being said, Wes, as I bet on South Carolina last weekend, thankfully at a little under as well, that offense stinks. So can we trust South Carolina to keep this thing competitive against an Alabama team that has just been on an absolute gauntlet before their bye week next week?
And the Gamecocks, I think, probably would win the award or the unfortunate distinction of being the most disappointing team in the SEC. They had a lot of hype going into the season. They were just outside the top 10, win the opener against Virginia Tech, getting the top 10, and then have been a big disappointment to be 3-4. So this is kind of like the rally spot, if there is a rally spot, to really save their season and get it back on track. Meanwhile, Alabama, and you mentioned it, Tim, after the bye week, after they had beaten Wisconsin, go to Georgia and win. The big revenge spot the next week against Vanderbilt, where they pulled away really in the second half, but that game was very competitive for 30 minutes. Then going to Mizzou, you know, one of the biggest games in Columbia in many years, and pulling out a 3-point win. Then, of course, the famous rivalry with Tennessee, where they win 37-20 in relatively dominant fashion. So it's like you have played number 5, number 16, number 14, and number 11 in each of the last 4 weeks and go 4-0 in that stretch. Now you go to South Carolina, and then you have the bye, and then, of course, you get LSU and Oklahoma back-to-back down there at Tuscaloosa. So I do wonder if this is a little bit of the kind of get-through-it game, right, if you will, at South Carolina. It's gone down to about 12.5. I still think it's worth a take. A low total here, by the way, as you would expect with that South Carolina offense, 47.5. And I do kind of like the Gamecocks here for small. Not a big play for me, but this is they've got to put everything into this here. South Carolina being 3-4 right now, disappointing loss at home to Vanderbilt, disappointing loss at Ole Miss, lost at LSU, lost to Oklahoma. They've won one game in SEC play. This is where they've got to turn it down, because the schedule doesn't get easier, because then you got to go to Ole Miss, nope, and then you have a bye week. Then you got to go to Texas A&M. You have Coastal Carolina, and then, of course, the Palmetto Bowl down there in the state of South Carolina against Clemson to finish it out. They got to have their best effort here if they're going to be competitive, and I think that they are going to give their best effort. They're going to have to put everything into this game. Now, you do wonder with South Carolina, is Shane Beamer, of course, we know Virginia Tech is open, and his father, yep, Frank, the legendary coach there in Blacksburg, is he going to go back home? He's saying the right, like, I love South Carolina. It is a great job, and I want to be here, but you never know. You never know what's going to happen, and that cloud is always going to be kind of over this whole situation.
I think he leaves to go to Virginia Tech. I think he resets. The challenge of being in the SEC, as everyone is seeing right now, it's a different world. And to go back home, his alma mater, where his dad coached, he's not replacing his dad, right? It'll be a couple of coaches in between. Mm-hmm. I think it's just the right time. You know, what's going to be fascinating, too, and this is for a topic for another day, I think Lenora Sellers is at the point where he's not going to go pro, in my opinion. I think he'll get the bag somewhere else, and he'll be a very hot commodity if he hits the transfer portal, which would be my prediction right now. But I'm with you. I think South Carolina, hold your nose, the old genius or jerk game, as we like to talk about here on the podcast. All right, what about Kentucky and Tennessee? Last week, I know a number of us were on Big Blue Nation in a pretty good spot there, and they should have won the football game. You look inside that box score, that's a tough one to swallow if you're Mark Stoops and company. Postgame win expectancy for Kentucky was 73.9% per Bill Conley's SP Plus there. So that is a really tough one to swallow. They get stuffed at the goal line in the first overtime. Texas is able to win 16-13. And now you're back at home, another night game. You're taking on Tennessee. You're an 8.5-point underdog. What do you make of this spot here? Does Big Blue Nation give another scare into a squad at home in Lexington?
I think that they do, and you're right about that game down there in Lexington last week. How about this? 395 yards for Kentucky. We know that offense has very much struggled and been up and down this year. But Boley goes 31 of 39 for 258. And this is against a good Texas defense. Like, this is still, regardless of what we think of Texas, that maybe, you know, the bloom is off that yellow rose, if you will, the yellow rose of Texas here. But that defense is still one of the better ones in the country. And Kentucky damn near had 400 yards on these guys. Texas, by the way, for their part, 179 yards. 179 yards for Texas. And I know Arch, it's been up and down, but they could still run the football, and they got held to 47 yards. So Tennessee is certainly a more dynamic group, I think, in terms of offense, and they play a little bit quicker tempo. But I wonder how easy it's going to be for Tennessee to really run the ball on these guys. If Texas couldn't run it, I don't know if Tennessee is going to be able to, Tim. You know, they could certainly throw it, and they'll let Aguiar try to throw it all over the yard, but I know the total has risen, but I think maybe that's in part of the Tennessee defense being a little bit more hospitable, and maybe Kentucky has found something with Boley and this offense and found a little something that maybe they can put up some points and don't have to try to win a game in the low teens. So I like Kentucky here. There's some nines out there. I think the 9.5s, maybe a couple left. They've mainly disappeared. But anything right around that marker, I think, is good for the Cats here. And this is one of those games for them. They've lost 3 in a row. Now it's like, we've got to do something to salvage this season and, you know, make sure that this doesn't go sideways. And this could be the spot, I think, for Kentucky here. And then with Tennessee, I wonder how they get over the disappointment now. Okay, they've beaten the teams that they should beat and beaten them pretty handily, but you've already lost to Georgia and you've already lost to Alabama, so that's two big rivals that you've already lost to. They barely beat Arkansas 34-31, an Arkansas team that's defense. If you watch them against A&M, they're a total sieve. They didn't get by Mississippi State by much, 41-34, so this Tennessee team, they haven't impressed me much. And I think that defense, that's a big risk for them to lay on the road here.
I got a tweet that I want that was making the rounds today, thanks to Old Takes Exposed, that made me laugh, where, you know, two wrongs make a right sometimes. So I don't know with this take from August 19th. I'm convinced that the Colts are tanking for Arch Manning. That would be from Robert Griffin III. So nailed it. Arch Manning, who will almost assuredly be back in college next year. And your Colts, as you know, 6-1 right now. So, you know, sometimes you got to shoot your shot, I guess. But that was like Carlton Banks stealing the ball from Will Smith and shooting a half court shot.
And about 30 feet wide left, or wide right, I should say, on that half-court shot. But, yeah, look, these quarterbacks, these NFL quarterbacks, by the way, Tim, they're pretty good. You know, just to let people know, a lot of them are. So these college guys, because I know that you and Adam were talking about the Heisman on the previous edition of the pod with Julian Sain, who is kind of the beneficiary and the victim here at the same time, right? Because Ohio State, that brand name, because they're going to win, you're going to be a bona fide Heisman candidate, but because you're throwing to the best receivers in the world, right, you don't get the benefit of the doubt, because you look at the other Ohio State quarterbacks in the NFL and how they are very much struggling. So is it the system or is it the player when you're throwing to the best receivers in the world?
Well, that was kind of the thought a couple of years ago with Bo Nix, and then they lose to Washington in the Pac-12 championship game. But it's not fair in some regards to the player because of the players that they are playing with. As I say, play about 50 times in the same sentence, but it does feel like Ohio State, Indiana, and the SEC championship, that's going to be the determining factor. And I know it shouldn't be, but we can get into a whole discussion about Heisman voters. They need to pare that down. There are people who don't watch the sport that vote for the Heisman. But regardless, I do think it comes down to championship weekend with Mendoza, Sain, Simpson, maybe Pavia. I don't think so, but you never know. So it'll be fascinating to see how that ultimately plays out. All right, lastly, Wes, I want to hit on what I deem the sandwich spot of the week. The sandwich spots did not come home for me last weekend, as I had Oklahoma in a tricky spot and South Carolina decided not to score many points. And then I bet on Florida Atlantic again. I think I got to retire the Owls. That's not working out all that well.
Yeah, we had some bad mayonnaise on these sandwiches, about 4 days old, that it's like, yeah, we should have maybe thrown that away instead of trying to eat that.
I think outside the Murray Delicatessen, we've got like a C for outside instead of the A. We need the A for how clean our restaurant is. But we're gonna get back into the graces, hopefully, with this spot. SMU last weekend, you know, people might not think of it because Clemson's down. I disagree. I mean, this was a revenge spot for beating them in the ACC championship. They were an underdog. They went down there. They won by double digits. And then next week, SMU, who, by the way, still unbeaten in the ACC, gets to host Miami. This week, they got to go on the road to sleepy Winston-Salem, and that number is short. And I can tell you one thing, when Van Pelt has its winners on Thursday, I will go ahead and say that Wake Forest will absolutely be on winners this week. And I think Wake Forest will be on both of our cards this week, as they are sitting there in what looks to be a pretty advantageous spot for Jake Dickert's squad to be pretty competitive here against SMU.
Yeah, I think the Deeks are gonna be on that winner's card for sure. Is that a GPG? Is that a general principle game? I don't know, but it's gonna be on my card, and I think it's gonna be on yours. There's still a couple 3.5s out there if you listen in time here to be able to grab those. SMU right in the mix, as you mentioned, 3-0. Georgia Tech 4-0. Virginia 3-0. SMU 3-0. Man, this ACC. You talk about how weird the Big 12 is. This is just typical ACC though, with Clemson down near the bottom, with Florida State winless, one of three winless teams in the ACC, if you can believe that. But SMU against Wake. Wake, by the way, Robbie Ashford, I believe, did not play the last time out against Oregon State. Now, they did get that win, and I thought that was going to be tough for them. But Deshaun Purdy, the former Charlotte transfer, gets the win over a really bad Oregon State team. But Wake Forest off a bye. They probably should have beaten Georgia Tech earlier this year when they lose in overtime 30-29. Had a chance against NC State. It also kind of fell apart. I think this is a tough game for SMU here, and I will be on Wake Forest here. I think Ashford, I haven't heard if he is going to be confirmed, the former Auburn quarterback. I believe he is going to be back in action, though, at that bye week, so that's another feather in the cap, I think, for Wake Forest. Deshaun Purdy kind of has some accuracy issues that even showed in a blowout against Oregon State. So plus 3 in the hook, early down there in Winston-Salem, give me Wake Forest.
All right, Demon Deeks, the old pilot, Jefferson Pilot special. Get your Bojangles and your Food Lion ready for this Wake Forest showdown against SMU. Wes, always appreciate it, sir. And have you finished Starting Five yet? Are you not going to watch the last episode with Ty Halliburton and the injury?
Yeah, that's going to be hard to see. That's going to be hard to stomach as we're underway now at the NBA season and very low expectations for the Pacers. But, Tim, Indiana's a football state. We're not bad. I mean, we just play basketball. We're a football powerhouse. Embrace your new football overlords in the Hoosier State.
Hey, right now it's hard to argue. You know, my Irish are trying to catch up to those Hoosiers right now when it comes to football. But yeah, I will actually be at Assembly Hall checking out a football school playing basketball in a couple of weeks. Looking forward to that. But we'll talk about that down the road. Wes, always appreciate it, sir. When we come back, we'll talk to Brett Cianci of Pick 6 Previews. We'll get his thoughts on the aftermath of Week 8 and looking ahead to Week 9 as well. It is the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right,
ahead, the Loaded Wednesday show continues as we are back, welcoming Brett Ciancia from Pick 6 Previews. Pick 6 Plus, just a great asset to have, as I mentioned, to start the show. Dustin Sweetelson, who, of course, does the late night program on VSiN Cashing Out, and then is on Saturdays, Live Bet Saturday after VSiN's College Football Tailgate show. He popped in, Brett, and he says, man, Brett's Pick 6 Plus is a lifesaver. All of the information that is out there. And I told you this, I kind of feel like, and you know, Ken Pom gets a lot of love, rightfully so, for what he does for college basketball. You could be college football's Ken Pom. All this information that is out there. So keep crushing it, man. It's a really great product to have each and every week into your inbox.
Oh, that's great news. I love the review. Thanks for the promo there. Yeah, Dustin's a huge fan. I was on his show this summer. I want to get back on there. But yeah, that's great to hear. That was honestly the goal, you know, because I do the preview magazine. I do 9 months of research on that. Once the season kicks off, it goes so fast week to week. So I wanted to provide a resource to just catch you up, get you relevant information, data to guide with not only your picks, but also just watching games on Saturday. So I'm glad to hear it's a useful resource. I'm going to keep continuing to grow it.
So your front page always is your updated top 25 based off your game grader. You hand out your awards of the week, coordinators of the week, which we'll get into here in just a moment because it was the week of the DC in your opinion. But we'll start with the big upset last Friday as Louisville as a double-digit dog. This is a game that me and Matt talked about on the Thursday podcast. Just thought this was the perfect spot to look to back Louisville. Did I think they'd win outright? No, not necessarily. But curious what your game grader came out on this particular game, Louisville pulling the upset over Miami. And how much does this affect Miami on how you look at them moving forward?
Yeah, well, a huge upset. It started out the upset weekend, really. And, you know, it was great defense by Ron English, the defensive coordinator. He was one of those coordinators of the week that you mentioned. And they picked off Carson Beck five times. Now, four of them counted. One was negated by a penalty. But really, probably his worst game of his career. Did it at home, too, in Miami. So I was really impressed with Louisville. Jumped out to a lead and held on the whole way. Miller Moss was very composed at quarterback. And how about Jeff Brohm? I mean, the double dog underdog killer. Did it again, another top five win. I think you tweeted out a great stat about his resume as a double-digit dog and great coaching staff. So your question about did it change my opinion on Miami? Not really, actually. I still think they're a top five team in the country. They certainly have the resume to remain there. If they win the conference, they'll get one of those bye weeks in the national bracket. It changed my opinion on Louisville, though. After Miami, this pack of teams was really tight, and I was waiting for somebody to emerge, and Louisville might be that contender to move above, you know, the rest of that pack there. So I've upgraded them into my top 15 nationally, and I actually have them favored the rest of the way. If you look at it, their hardest game remaining, I think, is the road trip to SMU. So they're positioned really well with the head-to-head to make it to Charlotte for the ACC title game.
Yeah, and that's the crazy thing, too, is when you look at their loss to Virginia, and that's a game that they're going to be kicking themselves in because they gave up, what, a scoop and score, a pick six in that one. And you look at the, you know, advanced numbers of Virginia beating Louisville, and that's not a game where they probably should have won. Post-game win expectancy of Virginia against Louisville was 10% over at SP+. So they're going to be kicking themselves quite a bit, but that's the nature of the beast in college football. You know, you mentioned Miami, and I still think they're in obviously great shape, and I think the non-conference portion of the schedule is enormous for them when you look at how Notre Dame continues to play, how South Florida continues to play, right now the favorite to get the Group of Five bid. So I think they're in decent shape, and for the ACC, they kind of, honestly, Brett, I think the ACC would love for Miami not to make the ACC championship game because then they would be, in my opinion, guaranteed two spots in the playoffs. So, yeah, there's a whole lot of tiebreaker scenarios. Georgia Tech still undefeated in conference play. Virginia's undefeated. SMU's undefeated. So the ACC, with that Miami loss, things are getting pretty weird in that conference.
Yeah, that's a good point, and that's probably the ACC's best way to get a multi-bid situation, because I think Miami on their own merits without a conference title, I think, is a playoff resume. They have the win over Notre Dame. That's a huge trump card in all of this. The win over Florida as well. I know, Florida with their coaching change might not be that strong. It's still an SEC win. So I like their non-conference resume a lot. And then plus the beating they put on USF, who looks like your non-AQ team. Yeah. So, yeah, Miami can get in on their own accord. This other ACC spot's wide open. I mean, I talked Louisville. Georgia Tech continues to find a way. Haynes King, a dual-threat quarterback, really shouldering the load for that offense. Malachi Hosley, another guy, has emerged for a 1-2 punch at running back. Really great offensive line play. So, but their margins are a little tight, so you wonder if that's sustainable. UVA, great offense. Louisville, great defense going forward. So, yeah, I can't wait to watch this unfold. And keep an eye on SMU. They are explosive as anything on offense. They might throw four picks, but they're going to have four long touchdown passes too. So they are just a fun to watch team every week.
Yeah, as Wes Reynolds and I just talked about, better be careful this week, SMU. That's a sleepy spot down there in Winston-Salem with Miami waiting on deck. So you do, and I love your front page. You've got your projection. You've got your game grader top 25 for the full year. You've got your game grades of the week. So let's start there. The most impressive result based off of your game grader from week 8, who earned the top spot this week for your game grade of the week?
Yeah, so top game grade of the week, I'm giving to Michigan, what they did to Washington. And again, with game grader, it's not necessarily the most exciting game of the week or the biggest upset or any of that. It's really the most statistically dominant when you compare it to the opponent's strength. So what Michigan did to Washington's offense was unbelievable. DeMond Williams came in. I think he had only thrown one or two picks the whole season. He throws three picks in a span of five passes against Michigan, but all in that second half, really threw the game away. But you have to credit the Michigan defense, holding them like 30 points or 35 points under their scoring average. Really nice job by Wink Martindale's defense. So that got the top grade, and the offense was efficient too. It wasn't incredible numbers or explosive plays, but a lot of third down conversions, play action passes were open, and they took advantage of everything. So Michigan got the top grade. Oregon was high, and Ohio State were high with huge blowout wins over inferior opponents. And then you had some of the headliner games like Georgia, Ole Miss, a shootout win for the Bulldogs there, really pulling away in the fourth quarter. And then, Tim, congrats to your Notre Dame Irish there, back in the playoff projection after what they did to USC. Was looking like a coin flip kind of game. USC took the lead, but then Jadarian Price had other plans, taking that ensuing kickoff back. And then, they leaned on the run game, 300 rushing yards plus for Notre Dame. That was the difference.
Yeah, you look at, and I'm trying to be a good host. It's called building off of what the guest had just talked about. But your game grade for the last four games has Notre Dame as the best team in the country. So since those two losses, they've really kind of turned things around based off of how your game grader puts out its numbers.
Yeah, for sure. And when they went down 0-2 to start the season, I was skeptical because, it was two quality losses, if there is such a thing. I know that's a buzzword, but looking forward was what caught my eyes, that there weren't going to be many marquee moments for Notre Dame. So that meant two things. They needed some of their opponents to improve down the stretch and turn into ranked matchups, or they had to blow everybody off the field. And they've done both. I mean, they have destroyed everything in their path, all by double-digit points. Huge game grades, like you said, number one in the last 4 weeks, number two overall the whole season. And they had USC improve. I think it's going to end up as a ranked win when the final top 25 shakes out. You have an undefeated Navy still on there. And again, it's the margins. It's the fact they're destroying teams, running the ball at will. The defense has improved. We were really skeptical of that defense in early September.
Oh, yeah.
And man, if they came back strong. So, yeah, Notre Dame, when you look at this landscape, I think they're going to be a playoff team here heading into November.
Yeah, I think Notre Dame fans, well, at least I was on Friday night, I was kind of trying to thread the needle. Louisville, I had a bet on them, so I wanted them to cover, but I didn't want them to win outright because Miami losing, now you've got a possibility if they go head-to-head in the committee's mind, obviously Miami should get the nod because they won the game head-to-head. But Notre Dame fans right now, big Pittsburgh fans with that game in the middle of November, maybe that could be a ranked versus ranked matchup. We'll see how that ultimately plays out. You mentioned Michigan. I want to go back back. Our producer Wyatt kind of popped on. No one can see it, but he was clapping. He was excited. He's a Go Blue supporter there. But you look at this conference right now, Brett, it is hard for me to envision a pathway to more than three teams making the playoff. Indiana, I don't want to say it's a lock, but it's pretty darn close at minus 2,500, their odds right now. Ohio State, best team in the country. Oregon looks like they're in some good shape. They do have a tricky spot against, you know, USC and Washington still on the schedule, but it's kind of hard right now with USC's loss to Notre Dame, Michigan's loss to Oklahoma, Brett, to really envision a pathway for the Big Ten to get four teams in the playoff.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's really a tug of war between these two power conferences, the SEC and the Big Ten, of who's going to get the most bids. They're both multi-bid leagues for sure. It's a matter of how many. And looks like there's going to be eight spots up for grabs. And I think that the SEC could get five of them. So I think the SEC gets five and the Big Ten will be stuck at three. To your point, I think Ohio State, Indiana, and Oregon seem like locks right now, assuming the chalk holds on the way out. But problem with them is that they're 4 and 5 teams, Michigan and USC. They lost their opportunities. They had chances in September and USC last week against Notre Dame to get that big non-conference win on the resume, and they lost them. And even worse, they're head-to-head against teams that are also on the bubble. You know, with Michigan and Oklahoma, Oklahoma likely will finish something like 10-2 and be a bubble team themselves. They have that head-to-head card on Michigan. And that also assumes that Michigan is able to win out and beat Ohio State, which is going to be tough. So, yeah, it looks like the Big Ten boxed themselves out with their losses to Oklahoma and to Notre Dame last week. And meanwhile, the SEC took advantage of those opportunities, has the head-to-heads, and is going to have a ton of ranked matchups here come November.
Yeah, just doing the quick math. If you are anti-Notre Dame, which I'm sure plenty of you are, I think a good pathway for Notre Dame outside of a loss, which is the obvious, Notre Dame loses, adios. You want Miami not to make the ACC championship game, because then things get a little interesting. The number 5 SEC team versus Notre Dame, how do their resumes stack up? So a lot of football still to be played, which is the great thing. And a lot of this will ultimately sort itself out. Brett, as we look ahead, actually, before we take a look ahead, I want to take a step back because I know you do a lot of work in the Utah area with KSL. And what did you make and what did your game grader take away from BYU and Utah? Utah closed as around a 4-point favorite, and BYU as a home dog took care of business. I'm very curious where you're at on this BYU team, because they're 7-0. They deserve a lot of credit, but it does feel like maybe the ranking and the record is a little bit higher than maybe the perception of the numbers are, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, first off, I'm glad the nation got to see that rivalry in the national spotlight. It's so electric. I like the color versus color with the uniforms and the camera shaking on big plays at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. But what a game. And I think Coach Whittingham summed it up perfectly after the game. He said, you know, it's kind of simplistic, but it's accurate. He says, hey, we outgained them, we outrushed them, we outthrew them, we outfirst downed them, but they had more points. And that's kind of the name of the game. You got to score more points. What happened was three trips into the red zone, in the deep red zone, that Utah decided to go for it on fourth downs rather than chip away and take field goals. 0-for-3 in those spots, 0 points. In a close field goal finish, that could have made the difference. So, credit BYU's red zone defense. And how about Barrett Bachmeier, the big, basically a truck back there at quarterback, barreling towards the end zone for the game winner, the game sealer. Really an efficient game from him. LJ Martin, their big back, is I think the conference leader in rushing. He's got 5 100-yard games so far. There's a lot to like from BYU. Now, if you're looking, like you said, it's two different things. Your resume, which, hey, they're undefeated. They have the big win over Utah now on the books. But power ratings-wise, looking forward, their margins are so thin. It's going to be a lot of one-score games down the stretch, and that could be a disaster for them. My game grader has them 21st in the country, 25th over the last four games. So a solid resume, nothing near the top 10. They have some tough ones coming up at Iowa State, at Texas Tech. They're going to be underdogs in both of those. TCU is going to be a tough one, even though it's in Provo. And then a tough offense with Cincinnati on the road. So their hardest games are still ahead of them. I see a couple losses coming.
Yeah, Cincinnati, I feel like a team that not too many people are talking about because of that season opening loss to Nebraska, which was right there. If Sorsby makes a better throw late in that game at Arrowhead, then maybe they're undefeated. So Cincinnati very much under the radar. That is a electric offense. Looking ahead to this upcoming week, you've got your matchups of the week. Let's stick with BYU, Iowa State, because once again, it's another situation of the unranked team being the favorite over the ranked team. And that's the situation here. I bet Iowa State. It's not just blindly because of the unranked team being the favorite. I like the situation for them. And I don't know if BYU can really take advantage of the weakness that Iowa State has, which is a banged up secondary. Cincinnati could do it, but I don't know if BYU is capable of it. Curious of what your numbers spit out for Iowa State BYU on Saturday in Iowa City.
Yeah.
Ames, sorry.
Yeah. No, it's going to be a great game to watch. I have it as one of my games of the week, like you said. And, you know, I've been skeptical of Iowa State since the preseason magazine, really. And they have a lot of weaknesses that they can attack. If you look at them statistically, I mean, BYU ranks in the top 25 of my opponent adjusted offense and top 25 on defense. Meanwhile, Iowa State's below average in both, outside the top 40 on offense, outside the top 50 on defense. That's out of 68 in the Power Four. So I really like BYU here. And despite it being at Iowa State, I have BYU favored by a point. So I think there's some value there on BYU. Now, remember, game grader doesn't take in a situation, those situational splits that you mentioned. And that's a tough spot for BYU, coming off an emotional rival game, heading into Ames, who's coming off a bye. I love the Iowa State coaching staff. They're getting the most out of their team every year. So I don't know. I don't want to touch this one. I mean, the numbers tell me BYU should be favored, but situationally, that's about as bad a draw as you can get.
Yeah, and that's certainly something where, you know, we've talked about so much on this podcast on VSIN, where you have people like yourself that have great numbers from an analytical standpoint and spit it out, but situations are so important, in my opinion, in college football. So you kind of have to marry those two together. LSU, Texas A&M, man, it's been a disappointing year, obviously, for LSU. And, you know, the way their fans are thinking right now, Brett, you would think they were 2-5, not 5-2. But you lose to Vanderbilt. You know, the Clemson win doesn't look as impressive as we thought it was going to be week one. I mean, the perception of that win to where it is now is vastly different. So you look at an LSU team, very desperate spot here for them with already two losses to Ole Miss and Vanderbilt. And now you're at home. You're taking on an undefeated Texas A&M team. I have not bet this game. I'm kind of wavering back and forth here on this one. We know the atmosphere will be tremendous down there in Death Valley, a night game, which hard to top a night game down there. What do you make of A&M and LSU?
Yeah, well, first off, it's rare for LSU to be an underdog at home to somebody not named Alabama. I think you have to go right back a ways to find that. So that's a rare spot. I think it's deserved, though. This LSU team has really come up flat based off our high expectations after their win over Clemson. It's really just been downhill since. Brian Kelly every week with the excuses, the complaints. It just doesn't seem like it's going well. I thought they would come out better out of the bye. I thought Nussmeier would get healthy and this offense would start clicking. It hasn't happened. So they're relying too much on the defense. The levy broke against Vanderbilt and you know, gave up 31 points to Diego Pavia's team. And then the offense came up small in the red zone, had to kick four field goals. You convert a couple of those, you win the game into touchdowns. So yeah, I really like A&M too. They're in my top five on game grader. I think they're solid on both sides of the ball. Top 20 offense, top 20 defense. Marcel Reed was the question coming into this season, and he has blown away all expectations, really playing some sharp football. I think last week against Arkansas was his best one yet. Four touchdowns on the day, and that offense was scoring at will. So I like A&M, the better team, maybe on both sides of the ball, certainly the better offense. I think they're going to light it up here in Baton Rouge.
All right, before we let you run, Brett, dealer's choice, game that jumps out to you the most for week number 9.
Yeah, well, Washington, Illinois, I want to go to that one. And actually, when I was reviewing this, they have very, very similar resumes so far. They both lost to Ohio State by 18 points. They both have an ugly loss with Illinois. It was by 53 to Indiana. Washington's came last week against Michigan by 17, but they were out-physicaled. But they both have great passing attacks and elite quarterback play. Luke Altmyer for Illinois in the top five nationally in quarterback rating. Damon Williams, very electric. I mean, I got to throw out the Michigan game because every time else I've seen him play, he's been incredible. So, yeah, I mean, I really want to see this game. It goes a long way for the Pick 6 Plus readers, too, having Washington as a win total team. And then I did fade Illinois hard in the preview magazine. So I might be looking at it jaded, you know, through some purple and gold glasses here. But I think Washington wins it out there in Seattle. Got to go across the country to play it. I'm going to say Washington bounces back and gets the win and covers the field goal against Illinois.
Well, I am not hopeful, but I guess I'm not going to light it on fire just yet. My Damon Williams. Well, Damon Williams when the Heisman's not happening, but maybe if they run the table, they could head to the playoff. But that loss last week was pretty tough there for the Huskies. Brett, always great, man. Just a reminder, and for folks, tell us more about Pick 6 Plus.
Pick 6 Plus hits your email inbox every Tuesday. It's a stats and information package on all 68 Power 4 teams. Advanced stats, my game grader formula, my line projections, my game picks, situational splits. I know Tim loves those. You know, team coming off the bye, home team records, home underdogs, that kind of thing. Every split you want. Talent profiles, who has the more NFL draft prospects. Everything you could ask for. Go check it out, pick6previews.com, Pick 6 Plus, and on Twitter, Pick 6 Previews.
He is Brett Ciancia, Pick 6 Previews, as he mentioned, on Twitter. Thanks to Wes Reynolds. As always, thanks to Wyatt and Ryan, our producers. Please do give us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, on Spotify. Check us out on YouTube as well. We're back on Thursday as we break down the Week 9 card with Matt Humans. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.